Chapter 8, Turmoil of War. The next morning there was a knock at the door of Joliad's hospital room and he quickly opened his eyes. He didn't remember exactly when, but he must have fallen asleep in the middle of his thoughts. "Come in," he called, whereupon a soldier with a stiff gait entered the room and stood beside the sick bed. Hastily, he bowed, holding a bag as he said, "Your clothes, sir. Greetings from the leader." "Thank you," Kako rejoiced and quickly opened the sack while the soldier left the room again at a quick pace. His original clothes were inside and had obviously been washed and carefully folded. Quickly, the fox hopped off the bed and got dressed before impatiently running to the hospital's front desk and telling the jaguar lady sitting there, "Hello, I'd like to leave the hospital. Everything should be settled." "Wait a minute, slow down. Who are you, young man?" she wanted to know. "My name is Joliad Kakodaz. Here, my passport card," the fox replied and handed it to her. She swiped the card through a reader and the front door opened. "Have a nice day," the feline said, smiling. Joliad would never have thought before that a simple piece of plastic, symbolic of bureaucracy and narrow-mindedness, would actually open some doors and gates for him. He grinned happily and said a curt goodbye while he was already halfway out. Above the entrance to the hospital, he could make out some writing that suggested the current location, Provalium. Kakodaz was in one of the northern districts of Bulmer, and since Josiah had explained a few things about the travel system to him during their train ride together, the fox knew immediately where to get on which train. The tension grew in him with every part of the way that the train traveled. It would still take a while, but soon he would be able to embrace Amarok. "I wonder what it looked like in Seligico now? Had much changed recently? Had Amarok changed?" The train now ran above ground and in a U-tube, which was magnetic and half surrounded the train. The view of the landscape was idyllic, with all its forests and meadows, small streams and a cloudless sky. It looked calm and peaceful. There were no more large houses here and only a few small huts lined the paths, which curved to break up the landscape somewhat. Nothing indicated war, which the fox was now getting closer and closer to. When he had changed trains a few times and had already left Bulmer far behind, Joliad arrived in Sestari and thought to himself, "So, now I'm curious to see if this train ends here for me." For a few moments the train stood still and no other Aramarans were to be seen. Joliad decided it was better to just sit and wait. He was lost in thought, wondering how his wolf was doing, what he must have been through. Was he waiting for him? Was he still to be found at home at all? A large fear seized the fox, which threatened to outweigh its joy of a reunion with his wolf. Perhaps Amarok was no longer alive. "Oh no. Zornis, young man. This is a restricted area. Only military personnel and leaders can go on here. You have to get off here," a voice rang out, snapping Joliad out of his thoughts. He looked up and into the face of a uniformed man with a laser weapon in his arms, who looked at him sternly and rhythmically tapped the ground with a back paw. "What, me? No, I have a ticket to continue," Kako said, holding it out to the soldier. "Just a moment, sir, I need to check this first," his counterpart said, taking a few steps away. He put the card into a reader and spoke into a kind of radio. Joliad could not understand what he was saying, although he tried to listen carefully. Then the soldier came back, handed him the ticket and explained, "All right, sir. This train, as I'm sure you know, is being diverted and is going directly to Seligico. For your information, at Camp 7 you will receive the required protective clothing and everything you need. Please report to Mr. Aradina, sir." Joliad nodded. "For the people and the leader?" the uniformed man exclaimed, standing at attention and saluting by striking his left breast with one fist. Yes. "For the people and the leader," the young fox repeated, not understanding why people saluted here. In general, he himself had never said this phrase for people and leader and found it silly. He had no idea what it must be like to serve at arms. Aramarans were drafted at the age of 20 to do a kind of basic military service. This applied equally to males and females, with females more likely to do utility work. In basic school training in Lotto, Kako had been told what the Imperial Army was and what it was for, but his enlistment would not happen for a few years. The Aramaran people had already experienced several small and larger wars, but that was long before Joliad's birth. The train floated on, and the fox promised himself to leave the negative thoughts aside from now on. Surely Amarok and his family were fine. They had certainly made themselves safe, and soon he could take his darling home and at least save him from this war. Arriving in Seljuko, Kakodaz got off the train and found himself in the middle of a military base. Aram Arans were crisscrossing all around him, and for the inexperienced fox it all looked very confused, incomprehensible and jumbled. Again and again loud orders were to be heard, and now and then the shot of a laser rifle was to be heard. It had never looked like this before. This base had been set directly on a meadow and consisted of simple prefabricated buildings. Oh my, what's going on here? Joliad wondered aloud, noticing that everyone here was uniformed and armed. This was very scary for the young fox, because although he could vaguely imagine what war meant, it had now come so close to him that he would never have thought it possible. A few times, several Aram Arans walked past him in formation. They walked in tight step and suddenly all looked the same. They were all uniformed, their individuality gone and their thoughts and movements synchronized. The commands of various military officers overlapped conversations of the other foxes, and everything was wrapped in a confusing speech salad. From farther away, the leader of a group shouted commands, and in between, the soldiers counted continuously and in steps, you, ro, do, wa. At first, Joliad walked around completely disoriented, when he suddenly noticed a building with Camp 7, uniformation and information written in large Aram Aran letters. He quickly went there, because he would not have endured this thunderous noise any longer. When he entered the camp, he looked around. It was full of foxes running around like chickens in a cage, screaming in confusion and trudging through the building with all kinds of things. It wasn't much better here than it was outside. Kako quickly noticed wooden tables lined up next to each other, and everyone seemed to be making an effort to get to them. A fat fox woman and several other fawns stood behind them, passing the things that were on the tables to the masses. There was a dense crowd, and any idea of civilization and decency seemed to be rather foreign to these Aram Arans. Joliad fought his way forward, pushing, as everyone did here. After a few steps, he breathlessly reached one of the tables and saw what it was all about: uniforms of different sizes and equipment variations of handguns, marching packs, equipment. So that's why they behave so strangely here? Couldn't they wait to go to war? All order was gone, no one knew restraint or was courteous. It was strange and foreign, eerie and disturbing. What good can I do for you, sweetie? The fat vixen asked in a raspy voice, and Joliad struggled to understand her. He held his passport card in front of her and was almost crushed by the mob jostling behind him. The fat woman took the card and said, "Oh, another 35, she said dismissively and continued to the back, rolling her eyes. When she came back, she called out, "Here, sweetie, this is for you. Only good stuff in it." She held out a large white bag to him and added, "Bored and unkind, stay brave and don't get killed. No sex, no kopeck, and don't get no dick diseases. Go to Eridina. He's buzzing around out there somewhere. See you soon and have fun." "Dick disease?" asked Joliad in irritation, but she didn't listen to him, instead cawing, "The next one." Before he could have given her his opinion about her behavior, the male was pushed further and further back until he finally reached the exit again. "Oh man." He sighed. "Now where the hell am I going to find this Eridina?" Actually, he only wanted to leave here quickly to look for Amarok, but he knew that he could not simply disappear. So he walked around as disoriented as before and talked to different soldiers again and again, but they couldn't or wouldn't tell him where this Eridina could be. But then he caught sight of a fox whose uniform, overloaded with medals, suggested that he must be a general. He walked up to him, and when the latter caught sight of the young fox, he asked in a friendly manner, "Ah, do you want to join me, young man?" He had to shout very loudly for Joliad to understand him, because explosions could be heard from somewhere all the time. "I don't know," Kako exclaimed. "Are you Eridina?" "Yes, that's me." His counterpart spoke laxly. "I should report to you. I also have papers," Kakodaz explained, showing Eridina his passport card. He looked at it for a moment and then said in a loud voice, "You want to be a soldier? Well, you're not yet 20. What were they thinking? Do we have no real men left, or did you do something wrong and this is your punishment?" Joliad pretended ignorance and shrugged his shoulders questioningly. "Well, it doesn't matter," exclaimed Eridina. "We can use everyone we can get. Come along, out of the noise. I'll brief the other pups in a minute. Why puppies? Asked Kako Daz, almost having to shout so he could hear his own voice. That's what we call all the newbies here, he got in reply, and followed Aradina up to a small low-rise building labeled Zornis. Inside, some soldiers were sitting, all of whom were already wearing their uniforms and now quickly stood up to greet Aradina. They saluted at attention, but this obviously left the general cold. Yes, yes, save it, he said, if it's of no use to you dead anyway. Here is another petum, a puppy, to play with. Help him into his clothes. Immediately, one of the males walked up to Joliad, took his cloth bag from him and removed pants, boots and other clothes from it. With a gesture, he then instructed him to put these things on. And where do you change here? Asked the young fox shyly. Great laughter erupted, which Aradina interrupted, well, shall we maybe make you a walk-in closet first? Again everyone laughed and Aradina looked serious, which Joliad understood as a request to change clothes here and now. This he did, briskly and shakily. As he did so, he was watched by the bystanders and could see exactly what to wear and how. Is that all right? He wanted to know and looked questioningly at the general. Yeah, sure. As long as nothing pinches, everything is suitable. Here with us, the dress code is not taken quite so strictly, he then explained. Kako stood with the other foxes, who waited anxiously for their briefing. So, Aradina called out, inside your cloth bags are packed backpacks. The foxes quickly began rummaging around in the pouches as Aradina explained, inside, among other things, are an infocom, provisions, bandages, and various knives and hand weapons for different situations. For now, you will carry a blade and a laser pistol. Big weapons are available outside in the base or directly on the field. Take what you can get. Everything about this is also in an entry on your infocoms. You can take a look at it today in the parlor. Tomorrow you will start your first day on duty. In case of doubt, the information your infocom holds can make the difference between your life and its premature end. So pull yourselves together and watch this boring shit. And what, someone shouted from the line, if we get picked off? Make an effort and it won't happen. If it does, it's regrettable, but it can hardly be changed. You'll get all the information about the strategy, the enemy and their methods tomorrow morning right after sunrise, here. Of course, you won't find that on the infocoms. It would be even nicer if our strategy would fall into the hands of a wolf. Whoever is not there in time will fly to the other side. The other side? Asked Kako Daz. Well, someone who does not comply may also be liquidated as a deserter, Aradina threatened. Joliad's breath caught in his throat, because until now he thought he could have come here and just taken Emmerich with him. But Radovan had only made sure that he could move freely. How little Kako knew. Your leader is Mr. Eden. His instructions must be followed without fail. If there are problems, you are always connected by radio in your helmets with your control center, the general now explained. Eden will now lead you to your room. Then work your asses off, girls. Tomorrow you'll start making wolf shack. Go on, off with you. Immediately, everyone left the building and ran after a fox, which had to be this Eden. Some of Joliad's new group were talking in confusion and, in addition, the sky sounded as if it was thundering all the time, but it was not particularly cloudy. The war seemed to be very close. Fuck them, boys! Shouted someone from the group, raising his right arm in the air while clenching his fist. A lot of laughter was heard and someone from a group of warriors shouted back, yeah, we'll ram them into the ground with their rods first. A martial Arua rang out from many fox snouts and Joliad wondered how anyone could be so enthusiastic about a war that resulted in deaths on both sides. He remained silent, however, and followed the troop into the parlor. Once there, he noticed that there were many bunk beds. Apparently, all 10 were to be accommodated together in one room, so completely without privacy. How was that supposed to work? Okay, everybody, find a place to sleep. Don't make it a catfight. Today you stay in here and work through the material. Especially the part about weapons is important, Eden began, while some foxes were already occupying their sleeping places, which didn't look very comfortable. You can move freely throughout the Jukanat. Everything east of the border fence is your playground. But you should be careful, even though it is said that wolves are inferior in every way, it does not mean that they are too stupid to shoot. And certainly, they know how to use their bombs. Bombs? Asked Kako Daz. Since when do Samoydans have bombs? They only have pitchforks and things like that. Where on earth are they going to get bombs? Radovan had already confirmed it to him, but Kako could not and would not believe that the wolves could be so strongly armed. Oh, you think you know better? Eden wanted to know. You don't know shit, you vixen. They've got everything. They're getting supplies across the sea and we don't know their covert capabilities in the slightest. You motherfuckers think you know something. But it's not so, I can assure you. The Samos are much more technically advanced than we thought. And this war, as everyone calls it, is the last shit, they're giving us quite a bit of trouble, because they want that fucking Jukanat. Joliad had to fall silent at these clear words and all the other foxes just sat on their beds with their muzzles open. Well, piss off to bed, ladies. The squad leader then called out and saluted, which most of the others followed suit. He quickly left the parlor and could be heard locking the door from the outside. It was designed to open by triggering a sensor, and thus remained firmly locked until someone would open it again from the outside the next morning. Some foxes began to discuss, while Joliad sat down on the last free bed and thought, would he see Amarok again tomorrow? How would he have changed through this time and how should Kako face him, explain to him that he had been in a coma for a month? One more night and the fox and the wolf would be able to embrace each other again. What a great thought, which caused the male's heart to burst with tension. Two of the members of the troop were talking about the Samos and Joliad didn't want to hear it at all, because they were talking very derogatory and below the belt. Still, he had to restrain himself, on the one hand, after all, he didn't know how strong the two guys were, and on the other hand, he didn't want to provoke any trouble so as not to risk being locked up. The foxes all worked their way into the material by following texts and animated images on their infocoms. Joliad had no desire to do this, because he assumed that he would probably not have to encounter a single wolf. After all, this was only a necessary, short phase and already tomorrow morning he would start looking for Amarok. So he lay down to sleep, while some of his companions continued to discuss, laughing loudly, but eventually fell silent and the light was extinguished. Only shortly after that, the young male closed his eyes and hoped that he would only have to spend this one night here and would quickly find his friend. Even before the actual morning roll call, the foxes were abruptly roused from their beds when a soldier rushed into the parlor and shouted, "Come on, everybody up. The Samos are moving in. This is not a drill." Confused and drowsy, the males jumped from their cots and tried to get dressed as quickly as possible. Joliad's eyes snapped open and at first he didn't understand what was going on at all. What's wrong? Someone asked. The Samos are very close and will probably start bombing again in a minute. Holster your knives and unlock your handguns. Quickly slipping into his clothes, Kako Daz was very nervous. He had never experienced such a situation before, nor did he expect to. A knife and a gun were unfamiliar objects to him. What was he supposed to do with them? Now he was supposed to be a real soldier and had to learn from the others how they prepared themselves, because they had apparently received instruction. That was something that Joliad was missing now. With their pack on their backs, they set out to leave the camp as quickly as possible. In the distance, the soft howling of a siren could be heard, and still running, Joliad asked a fox running next to him what that sound was. The latter called out curtly, "It's about to bang. Down." With that, he yanked Kako Daz to the ground, and most of the other Aramarans inside the base did likewise, when suddenly a loud bang ripped through the air. A large blast wave followed, causing the fox's fur to stand on end. Apparently, the very building that Joliad and the others had just been sleeping in had been hit by a bomb. Debris flew around and again a howl rang out. This time, however, it was much louder. Joliad was about to stand up when the one who had just saved his life pulled him back down to him and yelled, "Stay down." Again a bomb fell, but this time it detonated right in the middle of a group of soldiers, shredding some of them. A lot of shouting and sudden chaos ensued, everyone was running around wildly and medics were coming from everywhere to help. Joliad looked in their direction and looked at everything with widened eyes, body parts were strewn everywhere, blood splatters and debris scattered. By the gods! Kako thought to himself, feeling his ears beginning to ache. The air tasted sooty and it smelled like burnt fur. A disgusting stench was spreading, which was hard to get out of his nose. It felt like this situation was part of a nightmare. Out of the corner of his eye, the young fox realized that some of his people were crawling around screaming and crying, sometimes being trampled to death by other frantic soldiers. Many of them had lost a leg, an arm, or even several body parts that lay in tatters beside them. Joliad wished back to his childhood in a trance, hoping that these images would not burn themselves into his mind. He did not have much time to process them, however. "Come on!" the soldier next to him shouted, pulling him by the arm. Joliad now stood up and ran after him. "What's happening?" he asked, confused, as his companion dropped behind a building to hide. Kakodaz followed suit, and completely out of breath, he began to cry. It couldn't be true, the rubble, the blood, the screams. How could time have changed so much? He had never seen anything so cruel before. "What's your name, kid?" the fighter wanted to know from him, gasping for breath. Kakodaz calmed down and gave his name. "Okay, Joliad. You must be new here. Those were just bombs from the Samos. As you can see, they do have some. If they do that, they'll try to overrun us right away. That's what they always do, they hit it full on first, then clear the area and force us to retreat." "I hope not," Joliad said fearfully. "Oh yes. We've already lost a few lands this way," his counterpart said, pulling two bullet rifles out of his pockets. Holding one of them out to Joliad, he said, "Here, take it. I'm Jared, by the way." "Where did you get those?" asked Kako in amazement. "Haven't found any laser weapons. The Samos have these things that work with cartridges. There should be plenty of ammo in them. I don't adhere to regulations that prohibit me from having bullet weapons. Samos don't follow conventions either. You'll see that in a minute when they roll in here," Jared explained. "What do I have to do?" Kako wanted to know, when suddenly several bombs hit near them again and lots of earth and debris flew through the air. Both foxes had crouched in fright, but now straightened up again. "Shoot everything that's wolf. Hold it and press this button," Jared explained tersely, pointing to the trigger. "But that's not what I was trained for," Joliad pointed out. "Neither was I, but I guess we have to go through with it. It's a farce. They're stronger than we've been told." Then suddenly machine gun fire was heard and loud screams filled the two foxes with fear. "They're coming. Run." A voice shouted and Aramarans ran back and forth everywhere. Loud battle cries rang out and gunshots and grenade explosions could be heard again and again. One building after another detonated or caught fire. Kakodaz peeked around the corner of the wall as Jared grabbed him by the arm again and shouted, "Come on, we have to help." Before he knew it, he was in the middle of the action and couldn't believe what was happening. Quickly he and Jared ran after some comrades and could see that some Samoydans were already in the camp and running towards them. Many Aramarans entrenched themselves and fired into the crowd, while some of them died from bullets and laser shots. Blood splattered everywhere, its fine red mist permeating the air after each bullet that hit. Laser rifles did not cause such effects, they burned the flesh, which could now also be perceived unpleasantly by smell. In general, everything stank of death and fire. And it also stank of feces, that is, of what foxes and wolves could no longer hold in them once they died in agony. Then everything seemed to move in slow motion. Joliad watched as Jared held his gun in the direction of the enemy and took a few of them down with well-aimed shots. As he did so, he shouted out screams that were as slowed down as everything around Joliad. Looking in the direction of the Samoydans, he saw that while some of them fell and died, others managed to break through the Aramaran's first line of defense. Again and again, red, wet blood sprayed from their furry bodies, making their fur garments shine. "Kiss my ass!" shouted Jared, firing from his machine gun and releasing a volley of bullets that killed several wolves. At the same time he laughed diabolically, so that he already seemed very scary and brutal to Joliad. He was out of his mind and, to all appearances, could not stop slaughtering them indiscriminately. Kako himself stood there as if frozen and was incapable of movement. Several bullets flew past his head, but he just stood there, silent and impassive. He was covered in mud and blood and looked desperate, while his ears beeped incessantly. The fox was now a stone statue. When more and more wolves broke through the first line, chaos finally arose, because again and again duels arose, fox against wolf, they beat each other with fists and weapons, choked each other and cut each other's throats. They stabbed each other and broke their bones, bit each other and growled. Kako Daz saw Jared being shot several times in the body and then directly in the head right next to him, so that parts of his skull literally exploded. His comrade fell to his knees and stared into Juliad's eyes for what felt like an eternity before he fell forward and his twitching body finally lay like an empty shell, to be trampled by others and become like the muddy ground. All around the young fox they were killing each other and many bodies of both races lay around him covered in blood. The bodies piled up and seemed to blur into each other. All the blood soaked their lifeless carcasses and formed puddles like after a heavy rain. The fox could not comprehend what he was experiencing and began to cry again. These images were burned into his memory after all and he held his gun with a stiff arm, closed his eyes and suddenly fired wildly towards the sky. He didn't want to hurt anyone and broke down inside, shouting again and again, "You are all murderers." After firing a few volleys, someone hit him in the neck with an object, after which he fell to the ground unconscious. Juliad did not know how long he must have been unconscious, but when he woke up, his skull was humming. He looked around and realized that he was suddenly somewhere else. Kako was lying on his back, staring at the ceiling of a flat room, from which various pots, ladles, and other objects were hanging, rattling in the wind. The fox slowly straightened up and asked in a low voice, "Where am I?" "Ah, he's awake," someone shouted delightedly. Turning his head to the side, Juliad caught sight of an older wolf anthro who smiled and greeted his patient with an accented, "Hello. How did you sleep? What? What happened? Where am I?" asked Juliad in confusion, holding the back of his head. "Ouch, I think I remember now," he groaned. "Yes, my son gave you quite a smack, little Aramarin." The wolf just grinned and laughed while he went into a corner of the dark room and stirred in a big cauldron at the open fireplace. He returned with a small wooden bowl and offered it to his guest, "This is snail broth. It will taste good and get you back on your feet, fox." "Thank you," Kako agreed, "but am I not an enemy to you?" "Oh," the wolf waved it off, "fiddlesticks. I decide who my enemy is, not some run-of-the-mill major general corporal thingy." "That's nonsense. It's all bullshit." Suddenly, a much younger male wolf entered the room and spoke, "Oh father, you're talking stupid again. Is our guest well?" "Yes," said the elder gladly, "look at him." "Yes, I see," said his son, coming up to the fox, looking serious. He stood beside the bed for a moment, and when Juliad looked at him fearfully, the wolf drew a sword from its scabbard. Kako Daz was afraid and he gulped, but his counterpart placed the shiny silver weapon vertically on the ground, folded his hands on its handle and knelt behind it. He lowered his head and spoke, "I am sorry if I have caused you pain, young master." The father wolf also came running and bowed next to Juliad, who still looked confused and couldn't get his muzzle shut. "Wait a minute, please. Stop it. What's going on here? Who are you guys anyway?" he wanted to know. "Forgive our rudeness, young sir," the younger wolf began. "I am Iraklion. This is my father, Eridoroso. I struck you down, and for that I am sorry. When I saw how young you were, I took you to our home so that nothing would happen to you, young master. It is not normal for the Aramarans to have such young soldiers. They must be very desperate." "What's all this nonsense about young master? I'm just a regular Aramaran, or as you would say, a regular Ara. Enlighten me as to why you talk so pompously," Juliad ruled, grabbing the back of his head again and squinting his eyes. The two wolves rose again and Eridoroso hurried out. His son explained to the stricken fox, "You are, after all, the husband of our leader. And his lover is our master as well as he." "What, whose spouse am I supposed to be? Who is he, your leader?" "We are the Samoyedan resistance movement, fighting against the Uras, completely independent of the actual Royal Samoyedan military," Eridoroso told him, who had come back to Kako Daz and held out a leaf of a yellow flower. "Eat this, young sir, and you'll be rid of that headache in no time," his son then said. Juliad put the leaf in his mouth and began to chew. He made a contorting face because it tasted very bitter and musty. "And this is supposed to help?" he asked, disgusted. "Oh, yes," the old wolf said with a laugh. "Now, Who is this leader of your movement who is to be my spouse? Well, Amarok. Shouted Iraklion. What, he's here? Startled Joliad. Yes, and he's coming to see you right now, young sir. Amarok is also only 16, like me. How can he be your leader? You must mean another Amarok, don't you? I'm sure there's more than one. Before, Jack, his father, was our leader. But since his death, began the younger wolf. What, he's dead? Interrupted Joliad sadly. Yes, unfortunately, Eridoroso confirmed as Kako swallowed the petal and tears filled his eyes. And Amarok's mother? He probed. Iraklion shook his head slowly and sadly. And Edna? Only Amarok survived, explained the old wolf, who also looked concerned. A bomb from the Uras. They dropped it on their own land. The house in Seligico where they lived is only ashes. I am very sorry, young master. What kind of senseless slaughter is this? Asked Joliad, shaking his head in sorrow. All this was absolutely nonsensical, there was no reason to hate each other. Why couldn't they all come to their senses? The past had passed. Couldn't they get together and everything would be all right? Now a third wolf entered the room. Kakodaz looked at him and noticed that he was wearing armor with a helmet, a sword and a rifle. Completely stunned, he caught sight of the wolf's face as he took off the helmet and held it in one of his hands as he walked toward Joliad. Amarok! Shouted the fox joyfully, jumping off the bed and running towards the soldier. At that moment, his headache was gone. Joliad! The warrior shouted, dropping his helmet. He spread his arms and smiled as his friend embraced him and hugged him tightly. Damn, I missed you so much. By the gods! I'm so glad you're okay. Shouted Joliad, crying with joy. He sobbed contentedly and it felt like he was sinking into the strong arms of his boyfriend. He felt very light now and seemed to float. Amarok then loosened the hug and said, Let me look at you, sweetie. Where have you been? Why didn't you even check in? I'm sorry, Amarok. Rado and some other teachers sedated me when I tried to escape to look for you. They overdosed the drug and almost killed me with it. I was in a coma for a whole month, the fox babbled quickly. What? That's terrible. His friend startled, gently stroking the back of his head. But it doesn't matter now. Everything is all right. I'm glad I found you again, the fox explained. Amarok smiled again and gave his lover a gentle kiss on the lips. What a coincidence that we meet again here, he said and gave him a second one. Joliad looked into his brown wolf eyes, which he had not seen for so long, stroked his friend's forehead with his hand and smiled. Gentlemen, we need to send another group to carry out the next attack, Iraklion interjected, interrupting the pair. Yes, Amarok agreed, have the 7th and 1st line up. I'll address them in the village square in a moment. It's off to Ispo and then to Sitka. Yes, very well, young sir, Iraklion then confirmed, bowed, and left the room with his father. Ispo and Sitka? Asked Joliad. I thought you only dealt with Seligico? Not anymore, honey, his friend explained. Things are going well, we have taken Seligico, Shutpri, and Nevi. Now Ispo and Sitka follow. So you actually want to conquer the entire Jukanat? What for? Why shed any more blood? The fox asked without understanding. Amarok turned away, walked a few steps away, and turned his back on his friend. We're going to get what Carteron promised us, freedom. We won't let ourselves be locked up any longer. We are tired of it, the wolf spoke in a loud, firm voice, appearing angry, even aggressive, to his friend. The latter couldn't believe what he was hearing and asked, Seriously, Amarok? What's wrong with you? I thought you were against attacks and war? You were happy in Seligico, weren't you? Quickly the wolf turned around and hurriedly came back towards Joliad. His expression was very serious and for the first time the fox could see his friend's fangs, because he raised his chaps crossly and looked very combative. Happy in Seligico? He asked. Yes, we were happy in Seligico. Now he started yelling at Joliad, but there is no more Seligico. Oh yes. There is not even a we anymore, because my parents and my grandmother are dead, all dead. "I'm sorry," Joliad began, but was interrupted by more ranting from his friend. "Why? Why should you be sorry? You didn't kill them? Your friend, the Ara leader, did it. There is no more Seligico, no house, no Enna, and no parents. Everything is rubble, ashes and blood. The blood of my family. It's not your fault, but Carteron, that pig, will pay for killing my family. Innocent Samoydans who had nothing to do with the war." His aggression hit Joliad like hailstones in a storm, and it hurt him just as much. "Now hold your breath," he ruled crossly. "No, I didn't kill your family and I detest war as much as you do. But your father was the leader of the resistance movement. Have you forgotten that? Don't tell me he wasn't involved in anything. He didn't seek dialogue either. None of those blockheads with oversized balls did." A pause arose in which Amarok looked deeply into Joliad's eyes and finally seemed to calm down. "You still have very beautiful blue eyes. You can't be mad at anything at all," he whispered, which brought a smile back to his lover. "And I didn't realize how manly you could appear when you flash your fangs. Joliad, you're right, it all got out of hand. My father was an idiot. As big an idiot as the Ara leader. I tried to talk him out of it at the time, but he wouldn't budge. When our government agreed to provide us with weapons for the uprising, the situation became more promising and it was impossible to change the firm mind of our stubborn queen," the wolf spoke inside. "I understand. You tried, and that's all that matters, sweetheart. I talked to Carteron before I came here. The result was the same. We have to end this somehow. Let's go somewhere else where we can talk in peace. My body and mind have been waiting for you for a very long time," Amarok then said. He grabbed the fox's hand and guided it to his crotch, expecting Joliad to grab it. He did so and noticed that his wolf had an erection. He loosened his grip and said Amarok must have a lot to tell him. "Oh yeah," he confirmed, "I wasn't just sleeping like you were." "Hey, don't say that. I was working with my mind," Joliad objected. "You'll have to tell me about that later. Let's go to the square so I can send the soldiers away," said the Samoyden, and they both left the room. "Where are we, anyway?" This isn't Shutpri, Joliad realized and saw a large, paved marketplace with no sign of any war damage. Everything was very neat and tidy. Small houses surrounded the square, in the middle of which stood a small, splashing fountain. The sun was shining and birds were chirping. It was quiet and dignified. No explosions. No shots. No screams. No death. The experiences of the past hours came back to Joliad's mind and he shuddered as the images played out in his mind's eye like a movie. "Are you all right, honey?" asked Amarok. "Yeah, it's all good. It's nothing. Just been thinking." In the square, a few soldiers stood in line, awaiting Amarok's orders. "You are now in Samoyaja. My people found you and determine who you are from the card in your backpack. That's how they took you here," the male wolf explained. "Oh yes, my backpack. Is everything still in it?" asked Kako as they walked towards the group of soldiers. "I think so," Amarok agreed. "I'll have it brought to my house. First I'll brief my people and then we'll go there." As they stood in front of the soldiers, Kako Daz noticed how much his lover seemed to have changed. He seemed much more grown up, more determined, and less fearful than when they parted ways. What had happened? He seemed strong, somehow sexy and extremely masculine. "My friends and brothers," Amarok began shouting loudly, "today is a great day, for today we will take more cities. Our gods willing, we will kick the ass of the Aras in the name of our queen and our proud nation." His speech was briefly interrupted by a war cry, to which someone in the line asked, "Who's that guy? He's a Ara pig too, isn't he?" "This is my friend, Joliad Kako Daz. He is my husband and companion. And although he is an Aramaran, he is still my Aramaran. I expect his word to count the same for you as mine. I hope everyone understood that," Amarok told the wolves. They gave a loud and unanimous yes, sir. And Joliad looked at his wolf, amazed and impressed at the same time. How had he become so much more manly, so much more attractive? "Amarok, you do know that you just told your people that you," Kako began. "What? That I like male dogs? That I'm gay? Why wouldn't I? Do you think they appreciate me less now? Asked the wolf, smiling at his friend. Then he turned back to the soldiers and continued his speech, "You are about to be picked up by a ferry and taken to Aramaria. We have pushed their troops back almost to the borders of the Jukanat. But after we take Isbo and Sitka, the Banataraja Jagranate will be two-thirds conquered and the war will continue to take place only on their soil. Make sure that the two cities are taken. Spares the lives of unarmed people and allows them to escape. Fire only on Aramarans who are ready to fight. If you are attacked, tear off the enemy's head." Now an even louder "Yes, sir," rang out, followed by applause. "My friends and brothers, let us put an end to the oppression by the Aramarans and finally see to it that the words of our gods Samo and Jaja find their fulfillment. They will that this planet belong to all beings who inhabit it, without exception. And now it is time that we follow these words and teach the Aramarans that their continent, their island, also belongs to us all." One last time Amarok's speech was interrupted by a Samoyedan exclamation from the soldiers, who raised their right arms and smiled full of pride and ambition, "Kisar." Joliad did not understand this word, although the Samojadani and Aramarani languages were not very different. However, he saw in the wolves that it must mean something very emotional and deep. The leader ended his speech by shouting "Kisar" three times in unison with the soldiers, raising his right arm while confidently clenching his hand into a fist. The fighters now went their commanded way, ready and motivated for another battle. "What does this word mean, Kisar?" the fox asked curiously as his friend, obviously moved, looked after his comrades and took the fox's hand. "It doesn't translate easily. But it means that we stand together and are strong. All Samoydans are one family. We are free in our decisions, sovereign, always and at any time. We live in a slightly different culture than you foxes. Here, not everyone tries to be the fastest, best and greatest for their country. I mean, even with us, everyone does what he can, but we are always ready to be only as fast as the slowest of us," mused Amarok. "What do you mean? Haven't you ever wondered where your not so clever, or strong and brave foxes are? No, are there any significant differences?" asked Joliad, making his friend laugh. "Oh, honey, I'll explain it to you later," the latter said, indicating that he wanted to leave. "We'll go to my house. There we can talk in peace," he then said. Kako Daz nodded and they walked across the square holding hands until they stood in front of a small building that looked very quaint. It looked like it was a lot older than most of the others. The cottage was well kept and Joliad liked it very much. "Nice house you have. It's so different from the ones in Aramaria. How did you get it?" "Thank you. I took it over from an old gentleman who moved away. It's not the newest thing but it's in very good condition. I didn't pay much for it," Amarok explained. "Paid?" the fox wondered. Again the wolf had to grin. "Oh yes," he said, "you have no means of payment. It's just a different world here, sweetie." "Yes, we do, we have the letvari. But it's only valid in Bolmare, right?" "Yes. Your currency is valid throughout Samojaja?" "Right," Amarok confirmed, opening the front door with a plastic card that he slid into a slot. "Welcome to my fine little wolf den. My house is your house too, sweetie," he declared happily. "Wow!" exclaimed Joliad excitedly as he entered Amarok's living room. Pictures of Anthro wolves hung everywhere, which were only scantily clad. A large seating area lined two walls and the room was cut by several wooden beams. There was also a kind of kitchenette here. "I must say, you've made it very nice," Kako praised his friend's decorating style. "Yeah, but I had to," the latter pointed out, "otherwise I probably would have lost it." "Yeah, I can imagine that. Would you like something to drink?" asked Amarok, walking over to a shelf where there were some colorful bottles. "No, not at the moment, thank you," Joliad declined and sat down on the sofa. "But I also have Kopek there," his friend tempted him, winking with a smile. "All right. How can I refuse?" grinned the fox. Amarok brought two glasses and a bottle of the drink that had made them really fall in love with each other some time ago. He sat down with his friend, filled the glasses and asked, "How have you been out there?" "Well, I thought I was going to die. The war seems to have dissolved every structure and morality of my people. It's all very confusing, the why and where didn't matter. It was quite strange. I saw many foxes die, and that's within a few minutes, Joliad mused, taking a glass in his hand and contemplating it absorbedly. I'm sorry about that. I know what you mean, Joliad, his friend began. It was very brave of you to come here. You must know that I haven't changed. Especially not my love for you. I'm just very angry that the Uros wiped out my family. Kako put his glass back on the table. And I am very, very sorry for that. I love you, he said sadly, and they both embraced tenderly. I wish all this had never happened, Joliad then added sadly. It's not your fault, his wolf friend reassured him. You're right, after all, my father organized the resistance, which led to this senseless raid on Seligico. That should never have happened. But he allowed himself to be persuaded by his comrades in arms to do this foolish thing. Now the war is here, and our queen wants a crackdown. It simply cannot go on like this with Carteron and his oppression. The two males released their embrace, took the glasses in their hands and raised them. But it's nice to have you back here with me now, Amarok smiled. I'm glad chance allowed me to find you, and survive, his friend agreed. They toasted and drank their glasses empty in one go. Afterwards, they shook simultaneously and grimaced. Bah, that's a good one! Exclaimed Joliad and put the glass down again. The drink numbed any pain. Oh, yes! Confirmed Amarok. Have you actually noticed that Kopaik seems to be one of the few things our two cultures have in common? Kako Daz thought, Kopaik was called the same in both cultures, tasted the same, and did the same to its drinkers. True, it makes males come into heat on both sides of the Great Sea. I think Carteron should have a drink of it, too, the fox joked, and the friends laughed. Oh, you're sweet, little fox. Are you in heat now? Murmured Amarok, looking expectantly into the bright blue fox eyes he loved and missed so much. That may well be, my dear. By the time we finish the bottle, I'll have forgotten all about the agony and chaos out there. Then I may have to restrain myself, my dear, Kako said as he refilled both glasses and gave Amarok another sweet smile. The wolf took the fox's hand and put it on his. He looked at it and said, If you want, you can take a vacation with me first. Is someone waiting for you at home? No, his friend confessed, Carteron sent my parents away. They wanted to downplay what happened and pretend like nothing ever happened. I don't think I'll ever be able to make up the material in school, either. If this school still exists then. So does that mean yes? You can stay a little bit? Amarok was happy. Yes, but don't you have to lead your people? I have my deputies and advisors, of course. I'm only 16. I think it's all a bit much to ask anyway. They trust me because I am the son of their former leader at the time. Besides, I am loyal to the crown, the wolf male explained. Then I might as well stay here for a while, the fox confirmed and finished his glass. Suddenly, he noticed a small hunting knife lying on a shelf. He walked up to it and looked at it, its blade had the image of a wolf's head etched into it. A motif that Joliad had seen before. Nice, isn't it? His friend asked. Do you like it? Joliad thought and finally said, I have seen this knife before in a dream. But that is a longer story. There was an anthro playing a role, an Alsatian, or something like that. The knife was there in a closet. Where did you get it? Really? Alsatians live in southern Samoyaja and are very rare to find, Amarok marveled. It was an Alsatiate who gave it to me. At a bazaar. That's funny. Maybe a bad omen? Then he grinned. The fox looked at the matte blade and the carefully crafted wooden handle. It seemed to be very valuable and extremely sharp. Could this be a coincidence? How did the knife get here? Who was this strange shepherd dog that appeared again and again, completely unexpectedly? It's strange, Joliad said thoughtfully. The couple settled back comfortably into the sofa and they talked for quite a while about what had happened. Kako told about the dream he had experienced while unconscious and how confusing it was. Did that dog look good? Did you have some kind of wet dream, huh? Teased Amarok. Let's say, for an Alsatian whose kind I had never seen before, he looked quite acceptable. His eyes. They pierced my mind and are very hard to forget. Kind of cute, yes, but not as sexy as you, Kako cajoled. You said that beautifully, Amarok murmured, kissing his lover very gently on the lips. Abruptly he jumped up, hastily took Joliad's hand and called, Come, I still have to show you the bedroom. Immediately Kako Daz understood and followed him up a flight of stairs. This situation kind of reminds me. The fox said. Yes, I know, Amarok interrupted. And if you like, it will also have a similar outcome to the one we had then. There's nothing I'd rather be doing with you right now, Amarok, Joliad agreed, feeling his heart beat faster. Finally, the moment he had been waiting for so long had arrived. After all this time, he could be with his boyfriend again, love him and be loved by him. Arriving in the bedroom, the Aramaran looked at the large bed, which was very neatly made. It was made of wood and the frame was jet black, while the huge comforter glowed dark red. Looks inviting, mused the fox, noticing that there were some oil paintings hanging in this room as well. They were similar to those on the first floor, except that these depictions showed only unclothed male foxes and wolves. Some of them had excavated penises and looked very erotic and seductive. Very nice pictures. Who are they from? Asked Kako. I painted those. Really? I didn't know you could do that so well, the fox praised, looking at each picture very carefully. You're amazed, aren't you? Grinned Amarok, preparing the bed. It almost looks like Carteron with his male statues, Joliad compared. Amarok rummaged in a large, black wooden box and pulled out another blanket and pillow. As he laid them on the bed and lined them up, his fox friend asked him, How have you managed in all this time too? How should I say? Satisfy? Added Amarok. I haven't had anyone here, if that's what you mean. Honey, not that you think I wanted to, Joliad stammered. It's all right, the wolf reassured him with a hug. He held the fox's head in his hands and looked deep into his eyes. I drew these pictures for us. I had hoped that you would find me. Sure, it always excited me then, but I still have two healthy hands, if you understand. Now they were both smiling and Joliad said, That's so sweet. I hope you never have to strain your hands again. I hope, at least not on myself. Because that really wears them out. Then I guess you'll have to wear yours out on me, Amarok joked. I already have some ideas for the neglected male wolf. And if he's sweet and well-behaved, he'll get a great reward, the Aramaran purred and gave his friend another kiss. Come sweetie, I'll help you take off that stupid uniform, the Samoyedan suggested. Hey, this may be the last souvenir of home, after all, countered the other male. You're right. I'm sorry. But you're with me today, after all, and tomorrow I'll give you some other stuff. The wolf slipped his friend's pants down and chuckled, Oh, what sexy underpants you have. Very funny. It's completely ugly and way too wide. It's military stuff. Yours is much hotter, Kako negated, eyeing Amarok's crotch. So nice and tight. Oh yeah, I like that. Thank you, my sweet fox.